Thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's message. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if this message has inspired you to take your next step in faith, please let us know by reaching out to us through social media or the church office. We are praying and believing that God will change you through His word today. Blessings.
Well, in the fall of my ninth grade year, a moment happened that changed the direction of my life forever. I met a girl, all right? And, you know, to be transparent, you know, this not to over-romanticize this, but this wasn't just any girl, and this wasn't just any moment. This was a stop you in your tracks, love at first sight, Hallmark movie kind of moment. Now, again, to try to be transparent, I remember everything about this day, and when you ask Elise, she barely remembered me, okay? And okay, hey, that's fine, because I realized something in that moment that I was gonna do anything for this girl. There was nothing I wasn't willing to do for this girl. Now, she friend zoned me for 2 years, all right, and that was rough, but that's okay, because I was playing the long game, and I wore her down, and by God's grace, her maiden name was Newbanks, and my maiden name. That's another sermon. Her maiden name was Newbanks, my name is Myers, and by God's grace, alphabetically, we sat together in math class, and I worked my magic, man, as much as I could, and she finally agreed to go out on a date with me. And once we started dating, I gotta be honest, there was nothing I was gonna say no to this girl. I mean, whatever she asked, the answer was yes. Can we go eat here? Yes. Can we go watch this movie? Yes. Can you take me here? Yes. Yes, 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 yes. I will say yes to anything because I'm crazy about this girl. And I did some crazy stuff. So there was this moment where Elise had procrastinated, and you gotta understand something about my wife. She's not a procrastinator, all right? So all you type A peoples, my wife's in your tribe, okay? And so, but for whatever reason, she procrastinated a book report, 1,000 pages, and it's due in 2 days. So she says, hey, could you read the back half of the book while I read the front half of the book, and then we can get together and I can write this book report? And I said, well, yes, because I'm in love. Y'all know how hard it is to read a back half of a book? You ever walk in a movie halfway through? So we get together, and I was like, she's like, all right, let me know what happened. I was like, well, Steve died. She goes, oh, I saw that coming. I was like, oh, okay. And then Janet and Gary, they got married. She goes, I was kind of hoping that'd work out. I was like, well, I was kind of hoping I'd get a full book. You know what I mean? But like, hey, this is just what you do for love. And then it was her birthday, and I was poor because I'm, you know, a high school kid. So I made her this great gift, cost me about 20 bucks, and then I locked it in the car. And what does love do? Well, love is willing to break a window to get your girlfriend her gift instead of waiting for your dad to bring keys. So now a $20 gift costs this poor high school kid $220 with the window. But man, you do whatever, you're willing to do whatever it takes. And I gotta be honest, over the last, you know, 25 years we've been together, I have watched way more romantic comedies than I am comfortable confessing on, all right? But to be fair, and I don't know how you are, guys, but there's that moment for me where, like, I walk in the room and she's watching romantic comedy or she's watching one of those TV shows that's really girly, and I'm like, what is this? And so the first time it's like I'm making fun of it, and then the second time I'm like, well, what's going on with him, and then now I'm sitting on the couch, I'm like, why would she choose that guy? And then, like, by the finale, I'm crying, man, I'm in, she's got me locked in. So I don't know how your rhythm is, but those were my rhythms. And as I pursued this girl's heart, I realized something about love, is that love is rarely logical. It's rarely logical. It doesn't ask, does this make sense? It's not what love does. Love says, is it worth it? That's because willingness is the language of love. And so I don't know what you have been willing to do for the love of your life. I know some of y'all, you'll drive a couple hours just to get 10 minutes. I know you've done it, right? And some of us, before the cell phone era, right, when our phones were connected by a line to the wall, like, we would talk all night about nothing. literally nothing just to hear the voice. And some of y'all know what I'm talking about, right? Like you would fall asleep talking to the person that you loved on the phone, wake up and they're snoring on the other line. All right, it's time to hang up, okay? Like there's just things we're willing to do because of love. And then something crazy happened. She agreed to marry me. And then that changed the game completely, okay? Now we were in a whole different world because what I realized is that real love, it is not proven by grand gestures, but it's proven by the small choices we make. Meaning that sometimes you have to be willing to apologize first, even when you're like 4% wrong, but that's okay. Like, well, I'll go first, right? Sometimes you got to be willing to sit in silence rather than trying to fix what's happening. And sometimes, y'all, you got to fold some laundry that's not yours because you love the person that's wearing them, all right? Come on now. Listen, if I can just give some free advice to the guys in the room, sometimes, guys, just pick the towel up off the floor. I mean, it's small, but it really goes far. It goes far, okay? It really does. Like, these are just some things you got to do. But then, honestly, there's some deeper things about being willing, right? What does it really look like for willingness to be the language of love? Well, it means you got to be willing to stay when it's hard. You got to be willing to show up when you don't feel like it. You got to be willing to forgive. You got to be willing to fight. You got to be willing to do whatever it takes. Listen, you got to do whatever it takes when it is not easy, not convenient, or not logical, because that's the language of love. And so here we are. We're in this 5-week series, this 5 weeks into this journey together called Dangerous Prayers. And we've been learning, what does it mean to pray a dangerous prayer? And so we started out with one of the most honest prayers you're ever going to pray, and that's search me, God. You're saying, God, I need you to search my heart, and I need you to lead me into ways of life. And then we went into the hardest prayer you're probably ever going to pray, which is break me. God, would you take my pain and use it for your purpose? And then last week, we prayed probably the most vulnerable prayer you're ever going to pray, which is help my unbelief. That I believe that you're God and I believe that you're good, but I've got some doubts. And so along the way, what we've learned is that prayer is not a discipline problem. Prayer is a gospel problem. And the reason why we're doing this series is not that we get better at praying. We are doing this series so that we can get closer to Jesus. That's the gospel. And so today, if you're willing, we are going to pray maybe the most important prayer you're ever going to pray in your life. And so we're going to find this prayer in Mark 1. We're just 40 verses into Peter's account of the gospel. And at this point, Jesus has just launched his public ministry. Now, I know we're only in chapter 1 of Mark, and we're only 40 verses in. But there's a lot of things that have happened in 40 verses. We know that in the last 40 verses, Jesus has been baptized by John. He's been tempted in the wilderness. He's teaching, he's healing, and he's driving out demons. And already, 40 verses in to Mark, crowds are forming. The word about Jesus is spreading. And here's what's great. Everywhere Jesus goes, everywhere, broken people are finding hope again. 40 verses in. Man, Mark kicks off fast. Everyone is welcome to meet Jesus except this man, the man we're about to talk about right now. And so he has no name, just a known condition. And we meet him in verse 40. And here's what it says. In verse 40, it says, a man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus. Now, we got to be really careful when we read the Bible. Because maybe you're like me and you're a church kid and you've just read the same stories over and over again. Or maybe you're new to the scriptures and it's easy just to read it like you're reading any kind of book. But we got to be careful with this interaction because the situation that's happening right now between this man and Jesus, it only lasts 6 verses. That's quick. I mean, that's a blink. But we got to be careful that we don't miss something very, very important that's happening here, because this is not just a story about a man with a condition, but the truth is this is a story about all of us. And so we know that there is this man, and he has approached Jesus, and the Bible says he has leprosy. Okay, so if you don't know anything about leprosy, it is a horrible skin disease that's painful, and at the most extreme cases, it can even lead to death, but it's awful, visually, emotionally, it's horrible. And this is a time when we don't have the blessings of modern medicine, and so this man is is suffering from a horrible condition. And during this time, leprosy, it's not just a physical disease. This is why we gotta always dig a little deeper into the scriptures. There's something more happening here. The condition of leprosy in the first century is a life sentence. If you were diagnosed with leprosy during the first century, you weren't just sent to a doctor, they sent you away. You were sent away from your family, away from your community, and most devastating, you were sent away from your place of worship. Imagine that. Imagine in 2025, because of a physical condition that you're suffering through, everybody in your life says, you're not welcome here. You can't live in this town. You can't talk to your family. And the one place that everybody should go when they're hurting, church, you can't be here either. That's what this man is experiencing right now in his life. And leprosy in these days, in the first century, it's not just a physical disease, but it's actually a spiritual sentence. That you were not just seen as being sick, you were seen as being sinful. If somebody saw you with leprosy, their logical conclusion was that you did something wrong and you deserve the disease that you're carrying. So if you were a leper, you got to live on the outskirts of the city. You were unseen, untouched, and unwanted. I need you to get this, because you didn't just lose your health. You lost your humanity. That's what this man is going through. He's not just sick, he's alone. And I think that's the hardest part about this disease. It's not the pain in the body, it's the ache from being unseen. You gotta understand something. Men and women that suffered with leprosy in the first century, they just existed, but they didn't belong. They were alive, but they were not living. And I think if we're honest this morning, I think we all know what it feels like to carry something that isolates us. See, one of the things about being a leper was that anywhere you went, if there were normal people, clean people, you would have to shout out loud, unclean, so that everybody knew that you were coming. And so I don't think it's a stretch for us to relate to this man, because I think all of us understand what it feels like to carry something that isolates us. I think if you and I had a chance today to get a cup of coffee and just talk life, my guess is that you have your own version of unclean. That there are some things in your life that you shout out silently, and you hope nobody gets too close to you. That nobody gets the full picture of what's going on in your life. Now, for some of us, that's something from our past that we're ashamed of. Something that we've done and we have kept buried inside of us, and we're afraid that if we let people in, if we let people too close, if they just knew what our story was, then they wouldn't want to be around us anymore. But maybe for you this morning, maybe it's not something that you did. Maybe it was something that was done to you. And you, friend, are carrying around the kind of pain that you don't like to talk about, because it just feels safer to pretend that it doesn't hurt anymore. So we just act like we're okay. Maybe for some of us in the room today, maybe that is an addiction that you can't seem to shake. Maybe it's anger that you can't seem to control. Maybe it's some bitterness that you can't let go of. That maybe today your thing does not show up on your skin, but my guess is you wear the weight of it on your soul. And so it's easy just to read through these six verses and think this is just some dude with some condition talking to some guy named Jesus. But if we could just stop a second and press in, maybe we could find a little bit of ourselves in this moment. And I don't know what maybe you're carrying today. Maybe it's guilt, maybe it's insecurity, maybe it's fear. Whatever it is, it probably keeps whispering the same lie that it whispered to this man. That maybe while you've been laying there at night, maybe while you're driving to work, maybe you have heard the voice of the enemy say some things like this to you. You are unseen. You are unwanted. And you're unworthy. Now, you know the crazy thing about that lie? Is this isn't the first time we've heard this. This has actually existed since the beginning of time. And so if you go all the way back to Genesis 1, what you're going to find is that Adam and Eve are created by the breath of God, that God takes dirt and he breathes life and he creates a man named Adam. And then out from that man, he forms a woman. And here's what we know about the first two chapters of Genesis. I mean, it's good. It's good, good. That we know that Adam and Eve were created whole, that they were loved, known, and seen by the God of the universe. They actually took walks with him in the garden. They lacked nothing. A beautiful, unbelievable connection to the God of the universe. And man, it was good for about two chapters. And then Genesis chapter 3 comes. And with Genesis chapter 3, there comes a question. And this question, it didn't just destroy Adam and Eve, but it has destroyed every son and daughter that has come from their line. And the question that gets asked is this. God gives Adam and Eve complete domain over everything. He goes, anything you want, it's yours. Go here, touch this. But this tree right here, this tree, you can't touch that tree. You can't have this. And so in the middle of this moment, this sad, horrible moment, we know that the serpent comes along and he asks this question, the same question that has been haunting us since that day. And the question was this, did God really say that? Did God really say that if you touched the tree that you would die? If you touched the fruit that you would die? Did he really say that? And I wonder how many of us, man, that has gotten us into more trouble than we care to count. That on the edge of making a choice, making a decision, the voice in our head says, did God really say you don't need that in your life? Did God really say if you watch that, it's going to create any harm? Did God really say if you take that step, it's going to really create some conflict? Did God really say if you have that conversation with that person in that place, that that's really going to hurt your family? Did God really say that? And so unfortunately, Adam and Eve, they buy into the lie. They make a choice to be the God of their life. And sin fractures the cosmos. Shame was born. And here's the thing. When Adam and Eve ate the fruit, when they chose to be God, and their eyes were open because they were open, they did not see beauty and they did not see power, because that's the lie, right? Isn't that the temptation? Isn't that the pull? That I want to experience beauty. I want to experience power. I want to feel more. And if I can just take a taste, man. Just take a step. Just a little bit. And I want to be able to experience some things. And what happened was that their eyes were not open to beauty and power, but their eyes were open to nakedness. They looked down and they saw that they were naked, that they were exposed and they were vulnerable. And what did they do? Well, if you know the story, they hid. And then God shows up. And what God says has to be some of the most heartbreaking words you're going to read in the scriptures, is that the Bible says that God calls out and he says, where are you? Think about that for a second. That up until this point, God shows up, man, they've got beautiful fellowship together. They are walking side by side. They know God fully. And in this moment, God shows up and they're not there. And God cries out, not what did you do? Not who made this mess? Where are you? And Adam's response is, I heard you, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. And what God says next, I think, is equally as heartbreaking. He says, who told you that? Who told you you were naked? What changed? And again, I don't know, maybe you're a church kid like me, and I have heard that story so many times. If you're a Bible in a year reader, right? Listen, I always crush January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, all right? And I'm always getting through these three chapters, okay? So I don't know how many times in my life I've read these. That it's easy just to read it. And to think that this is just some story that you put up on a felt board or you read in a kid's book, but this is us. How many of us today, this is our story, that we bought into a lie? Did God really say that? And the moment we did it, Our eyes were open, not to beauty, not to power, not to more, but to shame and brokenness. And the God of the universe is crying out, hey, where are you? Where did you go? And we're hiding. Because we feel broken. Because the lie has been planted in our minds, and God is saying, who told you that? And listen, ever since that moment that Adam and Eve did that, ever since the moment that they hid, y'all, we've been hiding ever since. It just looks different today. It just looks different. So for us, hiding looks like hiding behind success. Because for some of us, we hope that achievement can cover the emptiness inside of us. For some of us, maybe for you, hiding is hiding behind busyness. Because if we just stay moving, if we just keep busy, then we don't have to feel the things that we're feeling inside of our hearts. Maybe for some of you, hiding today is like religion. I just want to be religious. If I can look holy, I can hide the fact that I feel hollow. And maybe for some of you today, hiding looks like control. Because it feels safer to manage my life than to try to trust God with it. Now, we're no different than our ancestors, that we have bought into the lie and we're still hiding. And that's why this moment in Mark 1 is so powerful. Do you know what I love about this moment that's playing out? This leper with Jesus is that this man, we don't know his name, but we know his condition, right? He is known by his brokenness. And he does what Adam couldn't do. And he does, I got to be honest, what a lot of times I can't do and probably what you can't do. He doesn't hide. He exposes himself to Jesus. He walks out. He breaks the social norms. He breaks every single cultural cue. And he steps in front of Jesus, dirty, desperate, and unclean. And this man asks the most important question of his entire existence. And it might just be the most dangerous, most important prayer you're ever going to pray in your life. And here's what he says. Begging to be healed. He looked at Jesus and says, if you are willing, you can make me clean. If you're willing, you can make me clean. Now that is a dangerous, dangerous prayer, because he's not saying, fix what's broken inside of me. Here's what he's saying. I need you to fix what's been killing me. It's not just about brokenness. I'm not some project. Jesus, if you don't step in, this disease, this situation that I'm in, it is going to kill me, and I need you to change me. He's not looking at Jesus and saying, would you just fix my body? What he's saying to Jesus is, could you restore my life? I want to go home. I want to be seen. I don't want to just be fixed. I want to be found. And that's what I love about the raw honesty of this man, is he understands what he's going through, and he's not hiding it anymore. He knows that if Jesus doesn't step in, nothing's going to change in his life. And that's what makes this prayer so dangerous. When you pray this prayer, God, make me clean. This is not a prayer about comfort, because this is not comfortable. It's not comfortable being honest. It's not comfortable stepping outside of the things that you're hiding in. This is not a prayer about comfort. It is a prayer about transformation. And here is something that I have learned over and over again in my life, and chances are, if we're having coffee, you've got the same testimony as me, is that transformation always costs something. It's not cheap. And when you ask God to make you clean, what you're doing, here's why this is dangerous. Here's what you're doing. You are giving Jesus permission to deal with what's beneath the surface. All right? I don't know where my landscapers are in the room, people that just, you find joy in landscaping your house. Just want to say, God bless you. Because I hate weeds. Myers family hates weeds so much that we got duped by one of those Instagram videos. I kid you not, I bought a blowtorch, y'all. And I went scorched earth on some weeds. And I got some false advertising. All right, that thing went straight back to Walmart. Like, I hate weeds. And here's the thing about weeds, is that you can cut weeds, but they're gonna grow back. You can mow over them. You know why I hate landscaping? Because if you wanna do it right, You got to get your hands dirty. You got to dig into the ecosystem of that ground, and you got to rip those suckers up. And I think what's happened is we have been sold a lie that we can come to church and do enough to mow the grass. But none of us want the honest hard work of digging up the weeds. So when you say, God, I want you to make me clean, what you're saying is don't just mow the grass. I need you to dig in, and I need you to get all of it out. I give you permission to go to some places that I'm not even comfortable to go, because what you're saying to God is this: it's not just the habits that I wish I didn't have, but I want you to look at the heart that keeps coming back. Because you just want to go after your habits and change your habits. Listen, I'll tell you what, January's coming. You can hype yourself up enough to develop some good habits. But let me tell you something in love, friend. If you don't let God change your heart, it's coming back. It's coming back. When we say, God, I want you to make me clean, what we're saying is, I give you permission to look at not just the things that people see, not just what I'm projecting to the world, but I'm giving you permission to look at the things that I'm hiding. The reason why make me clean is dangerous is because it's personal. And when we say make me clean, it is not just a prayer of desperation, but it is a prayer of surrender. It is saying, Jesus, I am done pretending. I'm done mowing the grass. I'm done faking the smile. I'm done trying to be this image and trying to act like I have it okay and trying to hide behind all these things that are just making me feel more miserable. Jesus, I'm done. And so if there's anything that I could say to you this morning that I could ask you to lean in, that I could say maybe could be the price of admission, it would be this next thing I'm about to say, and I've said it before from this stage, but I want to dig a little deeper into this. I want to have a real hard, honest conversation. We're sitting at coffee, and I hope that you would trust me enough to love you enough to say some things. Because we've been praying some dangerous prayers over the last 5 weeks. Search me, break me, help me. But if all we do is walk into this room and sing a couple songs and check the box on the Bible devotional for the week, but not actually let the God of the universe get in and pull out the weeds, we're just mowing grass. And here's the thing. Until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, nothing happens. Now, that's not the first time you've heard this if you've hung out with us for a while. We have said this a lot. And it is my prayer today, my loving prayer over you, is that you would feel frustration and pain for the place that you're in right now in your life, so much so that you will change. Because here's the thing, and this is where I want to expand on this idea that we've never expanded on like this before. Here's the thing about change. Here's the thing about this prayer. Here's the thing about letting God dig deep into the weeds and rip them out. I need you to hear this. The battles that you refuse to face, your kids are going to have to fight. I'm going to say that again, all right? I don't have any kids. Well, you got some people that you're probably responsible for, right? You got some people that are looking up to you. You got some people that are in your circle that depend on you, trust you, love you. So I need you to hear me out, okay? This is dad to dad, husband to husband, okay? Uncle to nephew, friend to friend, okay? The battles that you refuse to face, your kids are going to have to fight. So your inability to confront lust, men, your son's going to have to fight that battle because you won't. Mama, your inability to confront the insecurity in your life, your daughter's going to have to fight that fight because you won't fight it. That this isn't just about us. This is about the people that God has put in our lives that we're responsible for. And I just wonder today, how many generations is the enemy going to take out in our families until we say enough's enough? Did God really say that? When is that going to stop with us? And it's just so frustrating because we sit in these rooms and we hear these sermons and we read these scriptures and we think, well, that's a nice prayer. Well, that's a great thing. Maybe I'll get around to it. Maybe I won't. And you can keep playing that game, and guess who's going to have to pay for it? Your kids. And my hope today is by the grace of God that maybe today you would say enough's enough. It ends with me. And it ends right here. God, I need you to make me clean. Because when you and I finally get this, when we finally get honest with Jesus, something powerful starts to happen, that our surrender, it actually becomes invitation. It's an invitation to the God of the universe. And what's about to unfold in this moment is exactly that. So you got to understand something about this guy. Like, it's easy to read this moment. And he just gets in front of Jesus and he says, hey, you know, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Y'all, this is risky for the leper. And this is risky for Jesus. See, he knows that Jesus can heal him. It's not a question of whether or not Jesus can. He just doesn't know if Jesus will. Because in this time, if Jesus touches this man, even by accident, you need to understand this, Jesus becomes unclean. That's why they had to say they were unclean. If I'm a leper and I say I'm unclean, I got to call that out, because if I touch another person, I will make them unclean. Jesus can't touch this man. Really shouldn't even be around him. He is taking a risk. And he looks at Jesus and he says, I know you can do it, but I just don't know if you will. And I think that's where so many of us live right now, is it not? How many of us right now, that's where you live, that you believe that God has the power to change things, you just don't know if he's willing to change you. And let me tell you something today that I pray, man, just burst your soul full of hope and purpose. And that's this truth, is that God's willingness isn't determined by your worthiness, friend. That you would breathe that in, and you would feel relief for your soul that God's willingness isn't determined by your worthiness. And my proof is the gospel. Let me just give you a little bit today to help encourage your soul and remind you of who you are in Christ. And that this dangerous prayer, no matter how hard it is to pray, and no matter how much it hurts to let the God of the universe dig into the roots and start doing work in your life. Let me speak some life over you today. In Romans 5:8, it says that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That Jesus didn't wait for us to get clean. Go get your life figured out. Get that Bible in a year plan done. Join a small group. Let's see some consistency in your praying and your giving. No. Romans 5 tells us that Jesus didn't wait for us to get clean before he came. He came to make us clean. That's why he's here. And somewhere along the line, you bought into this lie that you got to get your life figured out before you can let Jesus figure some things out. And friend, that's not how it works. In Titus 3, 4 through 5, it says, but when the kindness and love of God, our Savior, appeared, he saved us, not because of righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy. That Jesus didn't love us because we're clean, y'all. He loved us because he's kind. That it's not our righteousness that moves God, it's his mercy. How many of us are in this room that we have experienced the love of God at a younger age, but today we think things have changed? Can I just say something? If the love and mercy of God if you didn't earn it then, why do you think you got to earn it now? If he saved you then, why do you think you got to earn it now? That his mercy, his righteousness is based on his kindness. Ephesians 2 says, but because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive in Christ, even when we were dead in our transgressions. It is by God's grace that you have been saved. That God's willingness comes from love, not leverage. He loves you. And then finally, 1 John 4, 9 through 10. This is how God showed us his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. I need you to understand something. Jesus didn't come to make bad people good. Jesus came to make dead people alive. That's the gospel. Not to make you good, but to make you alive. And what I love about this moment is that Jesus doesn't flinch when the man asks if he's willing.
he moves towards him. Look at what he says as we start to wrap this up. He said, move with compassion. Jesus reached out and he touched him. Remember what I said about this disease, that if you touched another person, that your sin, your brokenness would pass on? That it says that he said, move with compassion. Before he says a word, he reached out and he touched the man and he said, I am willing, be clean. And instantly the leprosy disappeared and the man was healed. That when Jesus touched him, something holy happened. Get this, Jesus did not become like the man. This man became like Jesus. He became like Jesus. And maybe you need to be reminded of that today. That no matter how far gone you think you are, no matter what you've been carrying, no matter what you've been hiding, no matter where you've been running from, I just want you to know something today is that when you get honest about your life, Jesus doesn't pull back from your mess. He leans in with compassion. He reaches out and he says, oh, friend, I'm willing. Be clean. That's the thing about love. It doesn't ask, does this make sense? It asks, is it worth it? I know someone needs to hear this today, and I don't know who it's for, but I just need you to know something, friend. You're worth it. And I know that's not what you've learned in life. I know that there have been people, by the way they have talked to you and treated you, by what you've seen and experienced, you feel like you are not worth it. But let me tell you something, that God's willingness is not based off your worthiness. Do you know why you're worth it? It's because God loved you enough that Jesus gave his life for you, that the cross is evidence of how much you are worth it. And that's the thing about willingness. Willingness is the language of love. And I just want you to remind you today as we start to head into communion is that Jesus is still willing. He's still willing. 2,000 years, I promise you, he is still willing. He is still willing to take your sin. He is still willing to carry your shame. He is still willing to reach towards your brokenness. That when Jesus touches you, friend, get this. I don't care where you've been. I don't care what your testimony is. You do not make Jesus dirty. He makes you new. That's the gospel, friends. That's the offer on the table for all of us today. Is he makes me and he makes you new. And you know what I love about this story is that Jesus doesn't walk away with your sin. He walks you out of it. He says, come on, I'm bringing you out of this sin. That's not who you are anymore, friend. That doesn't have to be your story. It may have been your dad's story and your grandpa's story or your grandmother's story or your mother's story or your great-great ancestor's story, but through the grace of Jesus Christ today, that doesn't have to be your story anymore. And it doesn't have to be your kid's story and their kid's story or your friend's story or your city's story or your church's story. That could we not believe enough that the grace of God could change anything today? And he could do it starting with you. So here's the question. Would you be willing today to say, Jesus, could you make me clean? Because when you do, I promise everything will change. I promise it will. Is that shame, it will give way to the mercy and the kindness of God. That isolation will give way to belonging. And our unclean hearts will finally hear the words that we have been waiting for. I'm willing.